Well, that, hey, another callback. Okay. Another callback. That's why I'm 5'2". If I didn't have scoliosis, I would be taller.
Oh, okay. Then you'd be closer to being able to reach things on the top shelf.
Yep. Yep. Then top shelves would be no issue.
No problem.
No issue.
And you
no
could just, all right.
Right. Right. And so it's like when you get jealous, when you feel that tinge of jealousy, never about the things that you don't want. It's always about something that you do. It's always about something that you do want or something similar that you see for yourself. And then you learn, you know, you learn what you care about sometimes from that moment. And so that was how I actually learned that I wanted to go to, I think maybe that's why why I ultimately went to college, because I didn't get into UCSD. And I was like, whoa, I'm so hurt by the rejection.
That's how it went in your head. Whoa, this is horrible. This really hurts, bro.
Yeah. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to SDSU and I'm going to kick ass at it. And I liked the honors program for a little bit, but that ended after a few years. And yeah, so I think remembering to focus on yourself is the best possible thing to do in that situation. And again, it comes back to the best advice ever, right? Focus on what you can control, not what you can't control.
Very stoic.
So can I control that you have a straight spine? No, I can't.
but you can control. Well, and that's sort of like your testimony as a somatics person that you are, in that you can't control how you were born genetically and whatever else led to your scoliosis. But to this point that you bring up, you've learned other things to control and deal with the life that you have. And now, thanks to what you've learned in somatics and other things, you've been able to have a good life.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth based on their value, not group identity. This is The Daily Archetype.
If you want someone to remain ignorant, just make sure they think in groups of identity rather than groups of values. Let's promote understanding, not ignorance.
This is The Daily Archetype.
What's up, archetypal friends? I'm your host, Isaac J. Miller, here on the only podcast that's constantly rediscovering our innate archetypal value structure. This one, we got into a really important issue, which is how to have good friends. And I did that with my good friend, Jade Sabansky. And this is an important issue we could talk on and on about. I probably will in future episodes, because it's becoming increasingly important as it gets harder and harder to understand what it takes to build and maintain not just any friendships, but good friendships that are good for you with people who want the best for you. I'm going to leave in the show notes some information about Jade, as well as some quotes from a couple books that relate to what we're talking about. Now, you're really going to want to stay tuned to The Daily Archetype the next few weeks, because I've got some really cool guests lined up. I just recorded, actually, with Marin, Dr. Ironbrain, the neuroscientist who's finishing his doctoral dissertation right now. And we discussed our innate instincts and how that they work against us these days, and perhaps how we can heroically overcome them or integrate them. And next week, I am interviewing a guy who usually does a lot of interviews, one of my favorite YouTube journalists, Benjamin Boyce from The Voice of Reason. I also have coming up Made by Jim Bob, who's one of my favorite modern satirical cartoonist, and some others where we're going to get into 3 or 4 books that I'm getting into when we have time and the interested guest, which are Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari, both of Dr. Peterson's newest books, 12 Rules for Life and Beyond Order, 12 More Rules for Life, and a couple others. So stay tuned for that as I continue to elevate the level of content here. And I know I've got a few, at least, regular fans or regular listeners that listen on a somewhat regular basis. So you know who you are. And over the next few weeks, as I get close to the 1 year anniversary of this show in July, I want to figure out how to take this podcast to the next level, so I can start having at least a little higher production value and having bigger and bigger, more important guests, and also just myself able to focus on this more and put more time into it. So for that, I need people to share more, subscribe more, get others to do the same, and also just engage and interact online as far as what we might be able to do to elevate the show, get on different guests, different topics, different books we can jump into, different areas and current events, or things about our psychological nature we might explore. Interact before I get too famous and cool and unable to interact with anybody at all. That's mostly a joke, but please help us take it to the next level in the next few weeks. Now, please enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Daily Archetype, a value-sharing community.
I am recording live with Jade Sabansky, and today we're going to explore the idea of if friends are real. Do friends really exist anymore? And if so, how do we make them more real? Jade, how are you doing this 2021?
Hey, Isaac, I'm doing great today. Thanks for having me.
This is actually a topic that, in some way or another, over especially the last year, I've had a couple people, or at least, I don't know, a handful of people or so, say, hey, what about this topic? Because it's getting harder and harder to maintain real friendships, I think partly with the internet age, and then even more so in the pandemic age, especially as the world is kind of falling apart and our personas kind of fall off and can get a little harder to deal with and so on and so on. So we were discussing possibly a topic like this. And what I kind of wanted to do as like a side project is over the next, I don't know, couple years or so, see if I can do a podcast like this on each of the now 24 rules for life by Jordan B. Peterson. So this time we're actually going to go back to the first book, rule number 3. And what's that rule, Jade?
Make friends with people who want the best for you.
Right. That's really critical because sometimes that sounds like a no-brainer. Like, oh yeah, of course we're going to do that. We're going to make friends with people who want the best for us. But especially as he gets into it in this chapter, we realize that it's actually really easy to make friends with people who don't want the best for us. And I don't know how much we'll get into the details of the chapter, just because there's a lot to cover and there's some other, you know, videos and podcasts that go into more of those details. But there's a lot of reasons that we get into self-destructive kind of friendships, whether that's a self-sabotaging type behavior or it's just the easier thing to do or whatever else. But Jade, what are your initial thoughts on this chapter and this idea?
I originally reached out to you, Isaac, because there's this question looming in the back of my mind for years now of, can we actually help our friends? How much can we actually do for our friends? Because I'm coming from a place where I felt that I tried my hardest and I gave my all and still ended up walking away on multiple instances. So not just with one person, or one off. And I grew up believing that we could help everyone, or I grew up believing in altruism. And I grew up believing that we should try and help people. But then it got to the point where I realized that there is a line between helping your friend and then just enabling toxic behavior or ultimately putting yourself in a situation where you're getting harmed. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those moments where Jordan Peterson talks about where you experience betrayal and then you're doubting everything else that that is in life when he talks. And I think he used the instance of getting broken up with or getting cheated on most often. Do you know what I'm talking about on a lot of his podcasts? And then because of one thing happens, you're left questioning a lot of other things.
Yeah. Well, in particular, just experiencing malevolence and or betrayal. And it's especially because we kind of come into this world as young adults, you know, like all bright eyed and bushy tailed for the most part, like under the illusion that or naive belief or foolish belief, which is actually good, because if we didn't have our own foolishness and naivete or whatever, then we'd probably be overly conservative, so to speak, and not enter into a lot of relationships that we should probably at least try out. But then at some point, probably in our mid-20s, which is where you're at in life, those illusions start to fall off and fall apart. And then you start to have to deal with that reality. And then as we deal with that reality, on one hand, you want to be like, what do we do now? Do we give up on people? Do we give up on friendships? Do we become more perpetuating? And once you experience that behavior and that betrayal or that malevolence, it's like the temptation is to either perpetuate it by saying that it's okay, so to speak, or it's really tricky because on the other hand, and that chapter talks a lot about, you know, distancing yourself from them or cutting them off or just not being friends with them anymore, which is really tricky, especially like I said, in 2021, when a lot of people are exhibiting this kind of behavior and it might not be the normal them. It might just be everybody's under a lot of stress these days. So yeah, now it's like everybody's kind of showing, you know, our personas aren't holding up like they probably should. So it's putting a lot of people in tough spots where, what do we do about that? How do we discern when to maintain the relationship and when not to? And that chapter talked a lot about sort of like the negative side, which is how we end up in bad relationships and what to do about it, which for the most part is to just not have them. But especially in times like we're experiencing now, we need to know when to like have mercy, give people other chances, and so on.
Yeah.
But that can be a slippery slope too. So what has been your experience or your thought on that?
It can absolutely be really hard to tell when to walk away or when to double down. Yeah. So to speak, and put in the work and put in more effort.
Right.
And I was recently listening to something by Case Kenny, who's an author in Chicago. And he actually has two questions to ask yourself before you walk away from a relationship. And it's interesting because I was listening to it with a specific person in mind. Now I realize how applicable it was to the friends that I had to say bye to. So the first question is, have you put in your all? And with the case of the friendships that brought me to this conversation today.
Yeah.
I 110% put in my all, 100%. Absolutely gave them everything I could, was there with them on the phone or in person, heard them out, sent resources, listened, was patient, took into consideration the life stressors that were happening just with the pandemic, but also in both of their personal lives. And I took all of that. And it was to the point where I was even making breaks for making excuses for them when I maybe shouldn't have. And the second question is, are you clear about what you want? And that's really interesting because...
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because if I wasn't getting what I wanted, which was a healthy, stable, low-maintenance friendship that was dependable and non-toxic, and I never came out and said it that directly, but I was like, hey, this is messed up. You can't treat me like this, or... this isn't really how people who love each other speak to each other.
Right.
But I think that with those two questions, it does make me feel better more confident in my decision to end the friendships. Mm-hmm. So it's super interesting to think about it like that.
When Jordan Peterson talks about this, and he mentioned this in this chapter and some other videos on the topic, and also I put up a paragraph from Robert Greene that said almost the same exact thing, quoting Nietzsche, but there's this thing, and I can't pronounce the German right. I'd have to... but it's like Schadenfreude versus Mitfreude. But Schadenfreude is the natural impulse to envy, and envy is usually more so your relationships, especially close relationships. And so it's a natural sort of lower animal instinct, so to speak, the snake, as Nietzsche put it. But we have this instinct to envy. It's like our lower animal sort of nature. On the other hand, the Mitfreude, as Nietzsche termed it, which is to share joy with. So to put that in sort of like some questions that or tests that Jordan Peterson put forth for like if it's a good friendship to have or not. The main one or two is, how do your friends respond when you share news? So if you share good news, do they help celebrate? Because some friends, if you share good news, they'll be like, well, I did something better, or like, I know somebody did something better. And that happens sometimes. Or maybe they won't exactly say that so advertly, at least at first, but they will. You can tell.
Or, of course, the cautious of the, oh, that's wonderful, but you do know it could all fall apart, right?
Yeah.
Like, just undercut it right away.
They don't want to share in the joy, but they're more envious. So yeah, how do they respond when you share good news? But then also, how do they respond when you share bad news? And you know, sometimes there's a whole like, oh, do they want to fix the problem? And that's not exactly the thing. I mean, it's probably the best thing is if they'll just listen when you have bad news. But the main thing is that you can tell they're not happy that something bad happened. Mm. So the other sort of example that he gives even in that chapter, you know, you might be trying to quit smoking or drink less, or, you know, it's fine if you smoke weed sometimes, but sometimes you want to do so less. But a lot of the friends around you, because they don't want you to be better than them, and they know if you, you know, shed off your bad habits and picked up good habits, then it would make them look bad in comparison. So they'll be like, here, just have a cigarette, you know, here, just have a drink when you're trying to, you know, turn over into sobriety or whatever. So that's a big test right there. And what do you think about that? Or what's your experience with that?
Yeah, it reminds me of, it gets passed around in TV shows and movies a lot. I forget who said it first, but never forget that they want to see you doing good, but never better than them.
Right, right, right.
And then it's in one of Drake's songs. He says, "It's, I guess things change. It's funny how somebody else's success means pain."
Yeah.
And I just want to point out that I don't know how it's been in your experience, but 90% of the time with the people that I've known, it's been either subconscious or unconscious. And these people weren't exactly aware of what they were doing until after the fact.
Right.
And I say 90% because in some cases I have had people be like, I remember getting ready for a party once, and this was in college. So it was a long time ago. I came out of the bathroom and the girl I was going out with said, "You're making me look like shit right now."
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Sounds like something that type of girl would say.
Right. And then shortly after, we were no longer friends. But
yeah,
most of the time, it is something that people aren't exactly aware of.
Mm-hmm. I think in the chapter, he gives the example of Cain and Abel, who he talks a lot about. He just mentions in the chapter. But so the big thing with Cain and Abel and the Bible story, I think it's Genesis 4 or whatever, is that Abel had more favor with God. And so eventually Cain killed Abel. And that led to a whole other story that we won't get into, but basically out of jealousy. Another story that comes to mind is Pinocchio, who Jordan Peterson mentions a lot. You know, he had these friends when he was like, you know, naive in the world. I think Lampwick was one. And he's like, "Ah, come on, let's go to Pleasure Island." And then that just turns him into, as Jordan Peterson will often say, is like a braying jackass, which is kind of what happens. If you just go with the flow of everybody that just wants to have the pleasure of now, then you just kind of become a part of that mass rather than him trying to become enlightened, which is to, you know, be a real boy without the puppet strings. So there's a lot of examples in the Bible and in mythology. And the other one too that he mentioned, the statue of David, which actually that's, I didn't get that at first. And that's like the image.
When he's talking about, how, what could be, but isn't.
Right, right. That statue, that artwork, it's like screams out that you could be better than that you are. And it's funny because actually that story, there's so much history and story in that statue, like maybe more than any other piece of art. But one was that Leonardo da Vinci was actually a more older and accomplished artist at that time. And he was on like some council of whatever Italian art at that time. When finally finished, Leonardo really tried to lobby to like relegate the statue in like some off back corner of nowhere where nobody would see it. And he drew out images of like, look, it should be like this. He exaggerated this and this too much. And so basically Leonardo da Vinci, which the reason that that's interesting is because, you know, you would think that a person should try to be around and be influenced by and want to do what, you know, people that you would look up to would want to do. So you'd think like, oh, it should be all about whatever Leonardo da Vinci wants to do because he was the more accomplished artist at the time. That's the other tricky thing is sometimes people that you maybe want to affiliate with will sometimes sabotage and backstab you out of jealousy too. So on one hand, there's the like finding people that have your values. So like avoiding people like Lampwick, for example. But then and maybe that's try to be with somebody like Leonardo da Vinci in that example. But if they have that envy thing going on, like Cain and Abel, then they can try to kill you. They can try to destroy your art or ruin it in a lot of different ways. That's how this gets a little extra complicated is we want to find the people with the right values and the right kind of like goals that you're on. But that envy thing is a really big thing to watch out for. But what do you think? What's your ideas and experience on that stuff?
my whole heart as you were saying that. I was like, no, it's not true. People are good. And then my head is like, what about that experience you just had and the one before that and that and that? So it's a balance, right? But unfortunately, it is one of those, it's just a reality that that's sometimes going to happen because it's just human nature. We're not wired to be BFFs. We're wired for survival. And there is that very primal fear and scarcity mindset that hasn't quite been refreshed or updated in everyone yet, where it's like they feel like if somebody has something, then that somehow takes away from you when that's not actually true. Though I do think that in the next 50 to 200 years, we are going to shift more into that, the idea that a candle loses nothing by lighting another flame. I think we will shift more into that, but I don't think we're there yet at all. I'm hopeful though, because I mean, even just today, I connected with somebody in Boston virtually that I felt like there was a lot of overlap and potential for friendship there. Because of the digital age, we don't have to settle anymore for the crappy toxic friends that are jealous and want to bring us down. We can connect with anyone at any time. I mean, what, you and I are like 100 miles apart right now? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is tricky, because as you get more, I don't know if I want to say enlightened or something like that, or more, you know, we've got these like terms nowadays, like red pill, woke, enlightened, things like that. But
introspective? That might be the most neutral.
Something like that. But as you get more aware of things in the world, that there's more to them. And that in the past, you know, you would just go with like what was there because that's all that you thought that there was. And we start to realize more and more that the more you go in and sort of like, I hate to use terms like enlightened, but the more that you become more aware, even just more smart, more educated, more read more good books, disavow pathological, ideological possession, then it's like the kind of people you can really affiliate with and that can really add more to you gets less and less. I mean, especially when it's like we're in this weird time too, where it's like, you know, people who are in certain backgrounds or certain ideologies, like even like I used to be a lot more involved in like, you know, church and the Christian world and all of that, and haven't like lost that faith. But sometimes it's tricky because in that ideology, it can be so limiting too, of like, it has to be only this way and we can't talk to anybody else that doesn't see it this way. And if they do, then they're like the devil or the enemy kind of thing, you know? But then, and then the same thing with all these different kind of political ideologies as well. And these psychological things, like, you know, I'm getting into more, you know, the psychological field and philosophical things and things. But a lot of that whole like liberal arts world is very entrenched and enmeshed in the ideological possession of the day, you know, of the far left and everything. And that was definitely a lot of the issues that I would come across in the last year, especially when it's like, I am not a hater of those who espouse those beliefs, but I don't want to encourage ideological possession. And people sometimes get super mad at me if I just don't amen their, like, everything is the fault of race and power and everything like that. So that's been really difficult for me too, is that I'm trying to find people in my narrow niche, but at the same time, a lot of those have very ideological values, when it's like, if you let your values come from within rather than these ideologies, then we're more like just the same human beings that can achieve more in the world. And I mentioned that too, because I know we talked a bit about this before, that you had some experience with that too, and you don't need to necessarily get into too much detail, but I think a lot of us have lost some relationships on one level or another, or at least for now, where it's like, just by discussing certain political issues, it makes certain people see red and not want to be your friends anymore. So what do you think about that? And what's your experience been with that, without necessarily getting into much details or or names?
We'll just pour one out for the homies really quick. All lost. So a couple of conversations come to mind that actually took place in the last week. I was on a hike with a good friend of mine, and he and I were talking about houses. He wants a big house. I want my dream right now is a condo in the city. something tiny, something small. My apartment right now is very tiny. And so we're talking about houses because he sent me this house in Florida that he wants to buy. That's $1 million. And it's like 8 bedrooms, 5 bathrooms, ridiculous pool on the lake, all this stuff, 2-car garage, all this. And I said, you know, do you want a big house? And he said, yes. And I said, okay. And I stopped the conversation there. But then I waited, I waited a little bit. And I said, you know, did you see what I just did there? You had a differing opinion from me. And I just accepted it. I didn't ask you, oh, but when you have 17 windows, that means you have to wash 17 windows.
Yeah.
I didn't say like, oh, but think of all the dust that's accumulating every second. And I didn't say, think of all the work that comes along with it. Because in that moment, I understood that we were coming at this from different angles. He wants a big house. I don't want a big house.
Right.
This is funny. Watch us listening to this back in like 10 years. And I live in like a house in the suburbs.
Yeah. A million dollar house with like 8 bedrooms.
So he was, and it was $1 million in Florida too, which is huge. $1 million in California is the condo in the city. That's my dream.
Yeah.
So I knew and I understood that though that stuff doesn't matter to him the way it matters to me, because our wants are different. And he wants it enough to deal with all that. And he doesn't care about the minutiae that I care about, where I want to be the one cleaning my own house. I want to be the one buying my own food and like
probably traveling, looking at expiration.
Yeah. And doing all these things, where in his head, he's like, I'll pay to have somebody do that. That stuff doesn't affect me. And so it's so hard for people to understand that not everyone has the same values and not everyone has the same preferences too. Like, we'll put values aside because we all know that people have different values, but it means something different. Like grabbing something from the top shelf means something different to you, Isaac, than it does me, Jade, 5'2". That means, that means a lot. And it's not a male female thing. It's not even a height thing. It's just a thing. Or fine, I guess it's a height thing.
Yeah. But there's some girls that are taller than me, so it might be different for them.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And so I asked him, I said, why is it so hard for people to just have a conversation like this and just accept that they want something different? And I've had, I live a very different lifestyle than 99% of the people that I know. And oftentimes people try and talk me out of that and they don't understand what it's like. And then the second, because they can't, we can't ever know what life is like for anyone else except for ourselves.
Right.
The other conversation that comes to mind is I was walking home, and I live in downtown San Diego, and I saw this big, looked like a chow dog, but was something else, big white fluffy dog with pink ears and a pink and purple dyed tail. And this family, and this was on Easter. So this family was like, oh my gosh, this dog is amazing. Let me take pictures. And the kids were gossiping over it. And the parents were like taking pictures of the dog with the kids and the Easter eggs and the pink and the purple. And I just cringed because I don't appreciate that kind of, I didn't know how the dog felt about it. And I still to this day don't. So I walked away, but I slowed down and I caught the dog owner's attention. I said, Hey, this is none of my business, but can I ask you something? And she said, sure. I said, how do you know that's not animal abuse?
Whoa. Straight to the point.
I don't mess around.
All right.
And
I like
she
it.
Went on. She went on to talk about how she said, well, she's a rescue. And I was like thinking, you know, and it was the moment where I got to practice withholding judgment or practice patience, because I didn't understand in that moment what that had to do with absolutely anything.
Yeah.
But she said the first time it happened, the groomer just did it without asking. She said, I don't know if she likes it. She doesn't even know that it's there. The groomer did it without asking, and it made her more approachable to people on the street, where she's going to have instances like that. And so more people were coming up to her, and I don't know if she likes it, but I do think that it helped other people warm up to her, and therefore she's having all these little experiences. And so it doesn't hurt her. It's non-toxic. It's just something that they wash in, and she doesn't know, and she doesn't fight it. And so we kept doing it. And I said, wow, all right, that changes how I see the situation.
Right.
And I feel the truth is, I feel more able to drop an opinion about it, because I'm not going to say that I like it. I'm not going to say that I support it. I just don't, I'm not at that point, but it definitely bothers me less. And then I actually referenced this. I said, thank you, because there's this other dog that walks down downtown San Diego, and anyone in downtown San Diego will back me up on this, but he's the little reggae dog, and him and his owner walk around all day with a wheelchair and speakers, and the speakers are on the wheelchair, like nobody's in the wheelchair, and they give off the between houses vibe. And
between houses vibe, with air quotes for those who are not on video. Okay.
And the dog is red. The dog is a little black mini toy poodle with red and yellow and green, and dyed into him everywhere on his head, his back, his feet, his legs, everything. Mm. And it makes me sad when he walks past, and it makes me feel uncomfortable. And usually the other people, if I'm with somebody, will say something too about it. But while I wasn't going to stop reggae dog on the street and ask him how he felt about it, I felt totally comfortable asking this woman. Mm. And I was happy to walk away from that conversation and understand that I don't always know the factors just from looking at a situation. I don't always know. Mm. And I think that is the easiest thing for most people to forget. And I don't know why more people don't have conversations like that. As I hear that, I think maybe I might be more confrontational than the average person.
More confrontational. maybe. Yeah. Cause I don't know. I think a lot of people will see these things contrary to their values, we'll say, and to put it sort of in Petersonian terms, is your level of agreeableness. So some people might have a high level of agreeableness, which obviously you don't. And they would be more like, just assume the dog must love this thing going on to it, this hair dye, whatever. And it's hard to say. In either case, maybe they do, maybe they don't. And see, animal stuff is weird because you can't really get their opinion on a survey. You know, like if it's a kid, for example, and kids are even tough too, because like kids can be like, yeah, I'm a woman or whatever. And maybe they're just, you know, when it's a kid, they haven't really developed, you know, your brain doesn't develop until you're about, well, your age, or fully develop anyway. So yes, and so we have these contrary values, or we often run into people with contrary values to our own, and then it's like, how do we handle that? Because ultimately, sort of to the, you know, topic of today, it's like we want to find people with values that align with ours, and hopefully people that won't backstab us anyway. And the other thing I want to mention too, like you mentioned the word primal or something like that earlier, and that we have this primal nature about all of this, and that's how that we can kind of like do these things even unconsciously, of this unconscious envy. And the reason I think that's important is because in our primal world, so to speak, when we are more of the hunter-gatherer type that we might theorize, everything really was about how much resources you can get. You know, that's why, like, why you see, like, right now you could like put food in front of dogs and they'll fight over it. Humans, on the other hand, at least here in the modern world where we have abundant physical resources, it's about the meta food or the information food, because our environment is so social, it's about the social world. So it's less about like, oh, did we get to eat this woolly mammoth, or did we not get the marrow from that saber-toothed tiger or whatever? And it's more about, like you mentioned, that girl, like, oh, you make me look like shit, you know, because what happens when like each other, however consciously or unconsciously or intentional or not, it might have been that somebody, you know, makes the other person look like crap or whatever, or people might start to see another person as the enemy, because that's really what's important is the social world now. Mm. And that gets into the whole, like, you know, lobster hierarchy, to, you know, stay with Peterson sort of terms, is that we have these social hierarchies or dominance counters constantly going on, and it's in our serotonin dominance counter system unconsciously. And so if we see somebody around us like subverting us in the dominance hierarchy, that can happen. But now we've got to figure out how to integrate that to where that we can help each other up the dominance hierarchy instead of like push each other around we try to ascend. And it's tricky how to deal with that when it happens on both sides. When you see somebody like trying to kick you off the dominance hierarchy ladder, and or you try to help help somebody up or get helped up. And then and you see it more so in like the corporate world. It's like the whole dog eat dog backstabbing world. But same thing just in the social environment when, you know, you're dealing with young girls or young people that's like they got to look a certain way. And if they don't, then it's like, screw you, bitch. I hate you. Yeah. But I'm intuiting that you've had some experience with this as you nod.
Yeah. I think most people have. But what comes to mind for me is that when that fear response gets triggered and these primal structures in your brain get activated, the newer parts of your brain, the part of you that's you, doesn't have time to catch up and respond.
Right.
It's already too late. There's already been a cascade of emotions. Mm. And by emotions, I mean, you know, your endocrine system and the hormones, it's already fired before you even get the chance to be like, wait, this is somebody that I love. I'm happy for them. And so that's why so much of this, I hate to say the word, but so much of this wellness movement is about slowing down, meditating, creating space. So that way you can literally build structures in your brain that are going to help you
get out of your lizard brain and into your frontal lobes.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Jason Goldberg, who is an author and coach, wrote a book called Prison Break. Mm. And one of the chapters was talking about how when you see somebody you envy, maybe somebody you went to school with who's doing a little bit better than you, or maybe somebody that who is similar to you, and it's just something about it makes you feel insecure. Mm-hmm. He says that you can use that as inspiration for what can happen.
Right.
But I also took it to mean to look at that and say, to look at what I want. Going back to the house example, if one of my friends has a huge house, that's not going to get to me because
as long as you don't have to live in it with them for some reason.
Yeah. As long as I'm not there. Yeah. But if someone has, let me think about something that I want that is appropriate to share. If somebody has like a perfectly straight spine that they achieve from somatics. Straight spine. Okay. everybody listening at home, I have scoliosis. My spine is shaped like an S.
Okay.
No. So if somebody has something that
sorry for being born with such a great spine.
Well, that, another callback. Okay. Another callback. That's why I'm 5'2". If I didn't have scoliosis, I would be taller.
Oh, okay. Then you'd be closer to being able to reach things on the top shelf.
Yep. Yep. Then top shelves would be no issue.
No problem.
No issue.
And you
no
could issue. Just, all right.
Right. Right. And so it's like when you get jealous, when you feel that tinge of jealousy, never about the things that you don't want. It's always about something that you do. It's always about something that you do want or something similar that you see for yourself. And then you learn, you know, you learn what you care about sometimes from that moment. And so that was how I actually learned that I wanted to go to, I think maybe that's why why I ultimately went to college, because I didn't get into UCSD. And I was like, whoa, I'm so hurt by the rejection.
That's how it went in your head. Whoa, this is horrible. This really hurts, bro.
Yeah. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to SDSU and I'm going to kick ass at it. And I liked the honors program for a little bit, but that ended after a few years. And yeah, so I think remembering to focus on yourself is the best possible thing to do in that situation. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to the best advice ever, right? Focus on what you can control, not what you can't control.
Very stoic.
So can I control that you have a straight spine? No, I can't.
but you can control. Well, and that's sort of like your testimony as a somatics person that you are, in that you can't control how you were born genetically and whatever else led to your scoliosis. But to this point that you bring up, you've learned other things to control and deal with the life that you have. And now, thanks to what you've learned in somatics and other things, you've been able to have a good life, where otherwise you'd probably be like a just bitter, sad, sick person. So I don't know. Maybe you can mention something on that, at least briefly, since that's your whole thing.
Just on the scoliosis piece or the somatic piece really quick.
Well, at least in that, that's something that you could control. And so you did. And therefore you have made yourself better, where you could have just stayed in that sort of like low envy state, but instead you learned to rise above it and make the most of yourself.
Yeah. So I have scoliosis, and I went from regularly prescribed muscle relaxants and up to 3 times weekly chiropractic and PT visits, and that's 3 separate for each of those. And they had me on benzo a little bit, to being completely pain-free and not even carrying ibuprofen in my purse, which is a pretty dramatic transformation. And as cool as that is for the physical stuff, what it really did was open up my mind, because if I wasn't having a back spasm, I was afraid of when the next one was going to come.
Right.
And that's not really a great place to live from.
Right.
I think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? I mean, I was pretty interrupted, I would say, where I couldn't really finish a train of thought because I was in that much pain or fear. And then something changed where I decided to put everything into what I could change and what I couldn't. And so while I couldn't change the physical shape of my spine, because my spine is still shaped like an S, I'm still 5'2", guys, unfortunately.
Okay.
Sadly. But
nothing wrong with that. You say that, you say that like you're 4'2". Like,
well, the thing is, okay, so in your brain is an entire map of your body.
Sure.
Your brain knows, you know, your brain has a map in your sensory motor cortex. It's called the motor homunculus of like where your body parts is. So I have the neurons for those vertebrae, but they're not stacked right. So I think I'm taller than I am. And oftentimes I always forget. So it is a totally like a complete.
How tall do you think you are that you're not?
Oh, at least 5'7". Yeah.
Okay, girl.
One day we'll get there, maybe. We'll see. So I couldn't change the brain. I mean, well, no, that's the most incorrect thing I've ever said, because you can change your brain. I couldn't change the vertebrae. But what I could change was the surrounding muscles. And so the muscles were super tight, and I was able to change the relationship between my sensory motor cortex and the brain to get those tight muscles to stop firing so they would lengthen. And lengthened muscles are just looser, more comfortable, less painful, because the actual body that I'm living in started to improve. So did my outlook on life, because no longer was I sitting around in fear of like, well, actually I can't come to the movies with you because I think my back is going to hurt. And now I'm upset that I can't go out with my friends. And all I can do is really like lay around and drink.
You're such an overcomer.
I suppose. Well, I am.
Yeah, because this kind of gets into a couple issues that I wanted to at least touch on, which is the only thing I didn't like about this chapter was it didn't do much with the positive side of this question of, you know, how to have like real good friendships. It just more focused how we fall into negative relationships. And that's important to understand and everything. But when I was kind of preparing for this, I, you know, searched for some other videos on YouTube. And one that, you know, Jordan Peterson was just doing like a Q&A on his channel or whatever a couple years ago. And somebody kind of reminded me of you, who's a person, had said that they had a lot of friendships because they're extroverted, but they're very shallow friendships for the most part. So the question is like how to get more like depth of friendship rather than just like number of them, which I think is important because that's especially an issue right now in this cyber age that we live in, where we might have 500 or 5,000 Facebook friends or whatever, and we might have a lot of acquaintances, but like it used to always be that everybody would have at least 4 or 5 really good close friends, and now people barely have that anymore. They might have 1 or 2 or 3, but they barely have close relationships anymore. Anyway, so one of the solutions that he gave, which I thought was really good, is he's like, it's fine to do like have your regular hangouts, like go to the bar or whatever. There's nothing wrong with doing that a lot of times, but that's more of like gaining and establishing the more surface type of friendships. And that's fine to help maintain those too. And maybe they can become more. But if you really want depth of friendship or relationships, it's doing things profound together is kind of the way that he put it. Like what you've done, even just with your scoliosis, and that you share that with like a community, and that you've got a little bit of a online following or whatever, that builds a network of things, of people, you know, healing their bodies, their minds, their lives. And like, that's sort of like what I try to get at with this channel as much as that I can, doing things profound rather than just staying in this like surface primal minutia that we can get into. So, and I don't know, have you had like thoughts and experience on that, of like trying to do more things profound with people and that helping to develop more depth of relationship than just shallow ones.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I score in the 99th percentile for extroversion, which is one of my favorite things about myself, and also translates into, I go outside and I meet interesting people. Mm-hmm. I go outside in any city, any part of the world, and I start a conversation with someone or someone starts a conversation with me. We exchange info. It's another contact in my phone. It's another friend. It's, it's as if I can go, it's as if I can make friends anywhere. Mm. And it's the, it is exactly what you just talked about, where it's like the keeping of the friend or going deeper, going to a different level is not that easy. It's not like that. Right. And I have a really clear distinction in my head between what a friend is to me and what a close friend is and what a best friend is. Oh, I always wanted that. I always wanted a best friend. Like I wanted that like Jade and so-and-so, or, you know, I wanted that title, that identity, but I never had it. And that's completely and understandably fine. So there's a lot, there's a few different people I interchangeably call my best friend, probably only two people. And then close friends are the people that actually know me and would, that I would trust a little bit more with more delicate things or more private things. And then I have a very loose definition of friend. Once upon a time, I worked in a bar and I met a whole bunch of people through there. And sometimes we'll see each other around town or do Taco Tuesday or visit somebody else who's working and get like seltzer, and they'll get beers and stuff because I don't drink that much. And those are friends to me. But I mean, if I was like skipping town and somebody had to come watch my cat, I wouldn't necessarily call them, I would say. But I think that when you lower your standard for what a friend is, or you just up your standard, or you up what it means to be an acquaintance or something that somebody that you know, then there's a lot of playroom in that. And there's a lot of wiggle room where you can meet a whole bunch of really interesting people. And though you may only hang out a couple of times and follow each other on social media, or you just reach out years and years later, like shout out to my friend Rainey, who's super awesome. And she's really into personality types. And she and I met on a bus from New York City to Baltimore in 2016.
Okay.
And we just sat, she just happened to sit next to me. We started up a conversation. We ended up talking the full 4 hours.
Wow.
And I was able to just mention my personality and different personality types of the people that were my inner circle at that time. And she was like, oh, so I bet you guys do this all the time. Or like, oh, I bet he misinterprets that, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, she knew us. It was like she knew us. So I think that so much of friendship is about what you and the other person are bringing to the table. And if you have something that you're super interested in, and so does somebody else, and they happen to be like vaguely, loosely similar in even the slightest way, then you can be friends with that person. But I might actually be the worst person to ask for advice on how to make friends, because
you're too good at it.
I'm literally in the 99th percentile.
You do it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's like, I was walking down the street and a woman complimented my jacket and I complimented her boots. We exchanged numbers, went to coffee. And by the end of the second time we were hanging out, she was like in tears, confessing like her whole life story to me and being like, wow, I'm so happy we met. Wow. Not practical. Doesn't happen every day. I understand that now. And so whenever people are like, oh, I'm struggling to make friends, it's so hard to make friends as an adult, da 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 da, I'm like, just go outside. But I'm starting to like, I realize that. Just go outside. Just talk to people. But I realize that's not actually practical. That's not everybody's experience.
And I will say that as a more introverted person who has to work a little bit harder on those things, one, like, again, as I was kind of preparing and looking at some other angles with this topic with Jordan Peterson, you know, he was saying how that like some of his clients would have a lot of social anxiety, but then going from barely being able to talk to a new person to being almost on the Jade Sobanski level, it can happen, but it's a learned skill that takes, you know, diligent work for years to develop, which actually is kind of important, because sometimes he gives a little bit of a doom and gloom, sort of like, if you don't learn by the time you're 4 years old, you're screwed. just because there's a lot of literature for that. But it's true that you're not going to have that naturally, like that natural socialization. Like you must have had a great time until you're 4 years old or whatever. But you can learn it. It's just going to take more practice. Like these personality types of, you know, introvert, extrovert, or, you know, sensing, intuiting, thinking, feeling. The big
and then
five.
Judging versus perceiving.
Yeah. Everybody has all of that, but they're inferior. It's just unconscious. And you can let it out in certain situations. And so I heard somebody give this analogy. A lot of people don't know the movie Harold and Kumar. Do you know the movie Harold and Kumar?
Only by name.
Okay. They're like stoners, but Harold is kind of like the uptight conservative, like very like, you know, Asian American, gotta be a successful accountant kind of guy. And Kumar is kind of the opposite of like, we just gotta like have fun and live in the moment kind of guy. And the analogy is that when you're gonna go and like socialize, so to speak, it's easy to fall in the trap, especially for more like introverted thinking or just introverted at all, to just like be like a Harold who's all like, oh, well, here's how I would solve your problem. And, you know, like, let me look at your PTS report and whatever else, especially because like that might work in the corporate environment or your work environment or wherever that you're successful. And so then you go around trying to like solve everybody's problems by doing their taxes and you know, balancing out all the variables and whatever. But really, they just need somebody to listen and to hang out with. And so basically, it's like, you've got both of those personalities inside of you, but you've got to learn to like let the other one out more when you're out socializing or you're out being around people. So either be more of the like fun in the moment person when you're around people, or if you can't do that, all you introverts out there, at least get good at listening to people. Even if you're not good at it, just act like it. And then there will go like really good friendships. And if you do that, you actually will get good at having friendships. Then the only challenge then becomes, like we've been talking about already, is then you have to start being picky. Because maybe that's the other topic to get to for a minute, is sort of like easy thing. And maybe it's more like a primordial evolutionary thing, is that we just kind of like gravitate to the easiest thing. And the easiest thing is to like have relationships with people that are easy to have relationships with. And those aren't always the right ones. We have to sometimes do the hard thing, which is, you know, we don't have to necessarily ghost people or tell them off or anything, but just like disappear into the sunset if a person is, I mean, well, because the thing is like, I don't like the idea of like, I got to ghost a person or tell a person like, screw you, you're not like following my values. But you just have to kind of like distance yourself from a person. I mean, there are exceptions, like some of the ones that we've dealt with recently where it's like people will cuss us out or whatever. and in those cases, we might even have to block them or whatever the case.
Yeah.
And that might be, so now we like have two or three topics to get in. One is how to deal with saying no to easy relationships just because they're easy, because we only have so much friendship space. I think that's how we get stuck sometimes. We get like having easy friendships. So then when maybe a better friendship would present itself, it doesn't go there because we've got like 5 or 10 okay, horrible friendships. What if we like, we're distancing ourselves from the horrible friendship, we'd be ready for the really cool, important friendship. And then the other issue is how to deal with it when like somebody attacks you or cusses you out or shows you that ugly side. Like it's a tough thing. God. What do you think, Jay? Solve all the world's problems. Go.
I think so much about this. I really do. I think a lot about it. Well, the first thing I want to say is that I have really, really wonderful, wonderful friend who is actually my suite mate in Chicago more than a decade ago. And I spent the week with her not too long ago. And I realized like, wow, this is what life should feel like. And this is what life should be like. And it almost is like subconsciously since then, I've been kind of holding everyone else to that standard where we just got along great. We did everything that we wanted to do. It was, we were like just eating. The only thing we ate that week were like vegetables and salads and some quinoa. And pretty much the only thing that we did was like hike. I don't know a lot of people who are going to do that. I don't know a lot of people who are going to do that with me, but it was just like.
In Chicago, are there any hikes in Chicago?
we were out of state.
Okay.
And
anyway,
so it wasn't even just about like, oh, I want a vegan who's athletic. It's like, I want somebody who treated me the way that she treats me, because she treated me like a person. And that was right. really, I didn't realize how many people weren't treating me like that.
Mm.
So I recently had to say bye to a longtime friend who I also have known for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where she was asking me to do something I was uncomfortable with. And I flat out said, you know, and it was incremental. Like, it wasn't the first time. Like, I wasn't surprised that she asked me. I was like, oh my God, she's trying to cross the line. It was like, oh, I should have known. And so I was very, very worried about her. And she was very hysterical and very upset. I said, look, I can do this thing, but I need you to get help. And she just blew up on me and was like, I'm already getting help. I don't need to tell you my life story, all this stuff. And so then I was like, oh my God, what do I do? So then, and this was like in person, 6 feet apart. Ha ha ha. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Screaming at you from 6 feet away.
Yeah. We were both wearing masks. No. So
two masks each.
Doing so good. We got to what minute without talking about politics?
Yeah.
No.
It's so funny that that's political, but anyway,
I know. So anyways,
it is, but go ahead.
She was so upset and she's like, no one will do this for me. Please. I asked so many people. They're saying no for no reason. So I said, all right, I'm going to do this for you. She wanted me to send a message to someone. And I said, but then I'm blocking them. I'm blocking you. And I'm leaving. And she said, okay. And it was like, she said a whole bunch of other stuff.
That's
but
dark.
I was just like, all right, doesn't care about me. Doesn't care about the friendship. So I did that. I left.
Yeah. You're just an object at that point. You're just like a means to an end.
Yeah.
And I've had some relationships like that. I won't get into it because it's more of like my, at least one ex-girlfriend that
personal.
Well, it's just like using a person as a means to an end rather than as a person, but I mean,
yes.
Tell us more, Jade.
Yes, exactly. So I really did it. I left. And by this point, it was like 2 a.m. And she was like, just stay over. I was like, I am not comfortable here. And so I left. I went home. And then the next day she texted me from another number. And I was like, and she apologized. And she's like, oh, come back. Da, da, da. And I was like, that's not how this works. When somebody blocks you, they don't want to talk to you anymore. So fast forward about a month and I'm out to dinner with somebody I really care about and respect and value their opinion as much, like maybe more than anyone, or as much as I value anyone's opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I was telling him like, so this thing happened and this went down, da, da, da. I'm like, why am I still in a position where I'm like shedding toxic friendships? Like I thought this was behind me. Like I haven't had to deal with this in like 5 years. Like, what is it about? What is it? Da, 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 you know, it's like, and then I realized what a weight was lifted out of my life as soon as like after blocking her and not, and knowing that she can't call or text. And I was like, wow, I feel so much better. Like just, I walk around easier. I didn't even know that weight was there. I was like, could you relate to this? And my friend was like, no. I said, what? He said, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I had like one toxic friend in college, but like, I guess I just don't let people have that kind of power over me. And I was like, whoa, bars. Because I couldn't even refute it. I couldn't say, what are you talking about? She didn't have power over me. But it was like, they did. They did have this like subconscious hold over me. And then I was looking at my adorable dogs and I was like, oh yes, you do run my emotions. You do have everything over me. You could, if you could, like, I will bend to your will for anything. And so it made me stop and think and realize like, if people are going to leave my life, they're allowed to leave my life and that's fine. I don't want to be upset about it. And so I kind of vowed to like, never let that happen again.
Mm.
And then 2 weeks later, somebody else that I really care about, we also had to say goodbye to, and that was, that one was a little bit different. I think it also got to the point where I had to block them, but I like left email open, or maybe they're still on my Facebook or something. Like I left, like I didn't block all of the lines of communication, just primary ones. And, that got to the point where I kind of was just like, I had to do it. I wasn't getting through to this person. And I realized that I was cutting them to way, way, way too many breaks, because I have a 2-year-old cousin named Elliot and I have a dog named Theodore. And I was thinking to myself, like, if Elliot was doing 2-year-old stuff, I wouldn't get mad at him. if Theodore was doing Pomeranian right. things, I wouldn't get mad at him. So why am I getting mad at this person for just being who he is? Mm. But then I realized, wait, that's completely BS. He's not a toddler. Right, he's not right. a dog. He's a grown man and he shouldn't be treating me this way.
Right.
And I just had, I just had to cut communication. So I ended up blocking that person for now. And it's been interesting to see how that has been playing out. Really.
Has there been any situations where, maybe not to that extent, but like you thought you might have to end a relationship, so to speak, but you found a way to redeem it? Because sometimes that decision needs to be made and it's a tough one. Maybe you need to give the person two or three or four chances, or I don't know. Can you relate to that? Because that's a tough place where wisdom starts to come in. What do you think?
Absolutely. I had a friend, and I'm still friends with this person, or I'm friends with this person again is the truest thing that we could say. But it got to the point where it was pretty toxic and I had to cut ties. But then actually, you know, sometimes the strangest things can affect you. Or sometimes you could be primed for something and then something will happen and you'll use that as an excuse to do what you already wanted to do. Right. So I hadn't talked to this woman for about a year and a half or 2 years. And then Mac Miller passed away. And for some reason, for both of us, that was a trigger of like, oh, my God, life is too short. And because somebody we used to listen to. And so then I went back to her and she apologized and I forgave her. And like, she welcomed me back with open arms. And then our relationship is definitely stronger now than it was 7 or 8 years ago, because we both just had to grow up in that time. And so that might be the only instance or stuff like that has happened where it just isn't working out. You try your hardest. It gets to the point where you walk away. Sometimes it comes back. Sometimes it works out.
Sometimes I think of people as having four animal natures, and this just kind of helps me sort that out, because it's inside everyone and it's in the dynamics of relationships or groups. So the four animal natures are the snake or dragon, the sheep, the wolf, and the scorpion. And the reason that I put them in those four categories, and it's just kind of something that I came up with after reading a lot of mythology and things, but the reason is because sheep, you can just let be sheep. The wolf, you can let eat another sheep, which is unfortunate, but it doesn't have to eat you. The dragon, you can tame or slay. And sometimes that's something to work out. Although the thing with slaying a dragon is it will always come back. So it's better if you can tame it. But sometimes it's hard to tame a dragon after it gets so big. And again, these are natures inside of everyone. But then the scorpion nature is that where you just have to walk away or distance yourself from it, because the scorpions will just be scorpions and they will eventually disintegrate themselves. You know, it's kind of like there's this mythology story of that where it's like the scorpion talks a frog into giving the scorpion a ride across the river or the lake, and the frog's like, well, if I let you do that, wouldn't you kill me? Because you're like, wouldn't that be the thing? Like, aren't I putting myself in danger? And he says, no, if we just both get across the pond, then we'll both be the better for it. And I won't sting you. And he gets across the pond. And as soon as they do, the scorpion stings the frog and kills him, and the frog's like, ribbit, why? And the scorpion just says, it's because I'm a scorpion. So that's the thing, I think, to discern. We deal with this in our own nature and we deal with it in those relationships around us, and that's inside every single person, in that they can be a sheep, a wolf, a scorpion, or a snake that becomes the dragon. And so we have to bring out the best in each other, which is really a matter of like bringing out the fifth, which is the human hero And so that's a lifelong process of bringing out the best in those in our social environment.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think about that all the time. I heard the version where the scorpion actually stings the frog halfway across to the pond and they both drown.
Yeah.
And the frog's like, why? And the scorpion's like, it's in my nature.
Yeah, it's my nature. And like I said, these kind of natures are inside of all of us. And you have to discern, being around this person or in this group or in this situation, is that going to bring out more of my toxicity? Because we all have a level of toxicity that if we're not careful, it can come bubble out, whatever. And so if anybody's listening, because I haven't shared this very publicly, but what happened with that relationship I had with, well, if I say much, then it's obvious who it is. But with the guy I did the most podcasts with, Dr. Lahavel Samurai, leading up to that, and we had hung out a lot, become friends, perhaps a little bit of a mentor figure. He had this, like, anything would trigger him into, like, going on these rants against conservatives, against Trump, against Jordan Peterson. But I was learning a lot from him in this area of, you know, Jungian psychology and things that I was interested in. And so I developed the habit of just, like, ignoring that. And then the last podcast that we did together, you know, because in a lot of podcasts, he would kind of do that. And I would just, like, try to divert it back to, like, okay, we're not talking about the evils of capitalism today. And we can maybe have a podcast on that. Because, of course, capitalism and things like that have their pros and cons that we need to deal with in society. But we can talk about that another time. And so in the last podcast that we did that was not aired, he would continue to go on that. And it's like, okay, let's do that on another podcast. But today we're talking about this. It's the chapter 8 in the book or whatever that we're going over. And I'm not going to go into too much detail. But basically he's like, no, I want to talk about this. And so I'm like, anyway, I snapped on him a little bit. And it's like, dude, you're like becoming this like totalitarian like thing that you keep accusing Trump of being by. You will not let us talk about anything else. And the thing was too, is that we both like said, you know, we're under a lot of stress right now. This is January, this like drag out election. Sorry, let's like continue doing our stuff together and everything else. I thought we had worked it out in the like coming days after that. And we actually recorded another version of that podcast that I thought we would air. Then the next day when I thought we were cool, he just sends me one text and goes to me like, we're not going to work together anymore. And then he deletes all the podcasts that we had together off of his thing. Oh. Yeah. And so it was like this whole thing where it's like Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo, not that we're like at that level of artistry or whatever, but where it's like, we have these values that are aligned, but these other ones that are not, and that they can kind of take over if we're not careful. You know, it's like, I almost wanted to be like, please, you know, like, but what I realized was happening too, is that I was like repressing my, you know, my own values. That actually caused me to snap a little bit. I mean, it wasn't anything bad. I'm just like raised my voice on a podcast. Like, come on, let's like talk about what we're supposed to talk about. And I guess he got really upset about that. But the whole point of that story is we have to try our best to stay on the path of we recreate the world in the image of those that we have relationships with, and or at least our own world, our own social environment. And so if we do it in this willfully blind or unconsciously blind, justifying toxicity or whatever the case, like they keep getting you to do bad habits or whatever the case, or bend on your values, then it's going to only get worse and worse and worse until a decision has to be made. And so the sooner you make that decision, the better. What do you think?
I know it's so hard when they're like ties that we care about and it's completely out of our power or control, or when it's just so obviously about the other person.
Right.
For instance. And that was the beautiful dark gift. The thing is that the most recent no longer friend, what do we call people who aren't our friends anymore? Person, people?
Ex-friend, so I don't know.
So the most recent person that I chose to cut out of my life said not only the meanest things that he's ever said about anyone or to me or about me in 10 years of knowing this person through good and bad, but also the meanest things anyone has said to me ever.
Wow.
And this is coming from somebody that like was, I totally thought of as like sweet and innocent and kind and caring and nurturing and really good, like selfless vibes and everything. So it was a total shock.
Right.
But it was obvious to me that this person was spinning out and going through an extraordinarily hard time, an extraordinary, like a really, really, really stressful situation, no doubt. But also that's not my responsibility. And I can't tolerate people saying awful things like that to me in the moment. I mean, he basically used 10 years of intimate details that I told him about myself against me in like an hour.
That's the worst right there. Yeah.
And so after that conversation, I mean, I was so like jacked up on just shock. Like we were talking about earlier with the Jordan Peterson betrayal, that I actually, I didn't sleep a minute that night afterwards, but what did hit me was how I didn't get upset. I didn't cry. I didn't lash out. I didn't say anything hurtful back to him. I actually didn't take it personally. It was shocking. It was unpleasant. I didn't like it. I definitely did not like it at all. But I didn't take it. I didn't take it in. I didn't take it personally. And I just instantly forgave him as soon as it happened. And I remember realizing like, oh, wait a minute. And it helped me just having that moment of clarity and just very clearly seeing that this really didn't have anything to do with me. And even though he was trying to, even though he was trying to hurt me, it wasn't my hurt to receive. Something about it in my brain just shifted and clicked and instantaneously.
Yeah, it's not personal. It's his thing.
Yes. And instantaneously, I was able to forgive my roommate for like, for something that I had been holding on to for like 6 months.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, what a gift this is that I totally see the parallel here and how I'm able to use that in this other situation. And so ever since, so it's only been about a week now, I've just been like, I feel lighter. I feel like, okay, great. Like, wait, that actually wasn't about me. Oh, that really was an accident. Oh, that really was a mistake. Whereas before I'm like, how could they do this to me? The world doesn't make sense. The sky is falling, you know? So that was really the upside in all this, was getting to use that to my advantage in that way. And this person who just exited my life just very clearly doesn't want to be friends with me right now. And I think that that's fine. If they don't want me in their life, that is fine. And I think that it's quite evident that he'd been lying to himself for some time about whether or not he wanted to be friends with me. Then it just doesn't work. You just, you can only lie to yourself for so long. And I think that it seemed like a last ditch attempt to like maybe burn a bridge, because that was the only way he could conceive of. He couldn't actually walk up to me and be like, hey, Jade, I don't want to be friends with you.
Okay. I'll close with this thought, because I know we're over time, but that I forget where exactly the quote came from. But it's like, when any two people have a relationship or a connection, a communication, there is inherently like another person between them. And so sometimes it's that the person between two people becomes what we don't like, and therefore we have to end it, or they have to end it, or it becomes toxic.
To anybody listening to this who maybe has had to deal with toxic friends and finding the balance between when to walk and when to work on it, to just really put yourself first, because that's the best thing that you could do. Because if these other people put themselves first, they wouldn't have felt the need to lash out on me. And if they didn't lash out, then I wouldn't have cut them off. And I know it's kind of awkward to think about like prioritizing yourself for a lot of us, because we want to just, it's so much easier to help other people. It really is. And Jordan Peterson talks about that a lot too. But
even in this chapter.
Sometimes, sometimes we have to let people go and we can learn from it and use it. And even if we can't use it or learn from it, then it's an instance where we get to practice not making things worse. So for example, like with this whole shindig going down recently, I mean, 10 years ago, I wouldn't be able to handle it the way I am now.
Right.
It totally would have like ruined a lot for me. And then the other thing that I wanted to say too is for people who are looking for friends, just put yourself out there. And when you, if you find something in life that you care about, and you're passionate about, and you love it so much, you want to share it with other people, you're naturally going to attract not only just other people, but the right kinds of people.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to mention on this note is just that what we're really looking for is people that we can be honest with for the right reasons. And that's mainly to help each other grow, because sometimes the paradox that sort of solves is, one, we often find people that maybe it's like, they get in the like self-help world or psychology world mm-hmm. or the like do good world, but they're just doing it to make themselves feel better, or mm-hmm. or they get to this, they develop a certain persona, which is like, I'm this good person because I'm like whatever, whether it's in a church or it's the self-help psychology whatever world. And oh, it's like, and then you like show your a vulnerability or an imperfection. They're like, oh, get away, you know. So you don't even want to be around those people that act all perfect, because they're not, they're just like hiding their scorpions that'll just come out later. But then also you want to be able to be honest with people for the purpose of growth. So you want to be able to say, look, I have this mistake, this hard thing, whatever. But the paradox that brings up, but simultaneously sort of solves, is that sometimes people will be honest. You'll get into like honest dialogue with people about like, here's what's going on with my life, but they're just like unloading toxic waste, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you want to be able to be honest with people for the purpose of growth, and you want people to be honest with you for the purpose of growth and like higher values and accomplishing profound things and building a better life and a better world between you and all of that. So yeah, it's honesty for growth, not honesty for the wrong reasons, and not dishonesty for any reasons. What do you think?
Bars.
But I don't know. Any other closing thoughts?
No, I think that's wonderful. I think it's a great place to end.
Sure, yeah.
And yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, anytime. And yeah, as I got on this topic, I feel like it's a deep one, and maybe we'll revisit it, maybe with us and maybe with other people, or maybe go at it from different angles. But it's a big one, because it's basically your social environment, which is your whole that's where we live. It's not like just like we live in a house or we have, you know, these material things. It's like our social environment is our whole world that we live in. It's like our soil that we grow the good things in life that we need out of, or you know, that we get sheep out of, or dragons out of the cave, or watch out for wolves and scorpions, you know. And we want that social environment to be one that causes us to become better and not worse. But if we're not careful, it can, you know, go the wrong way. So what do you think?
I think it's all important to keep in mind, and always just, if there's anything irritating you about your life or your social life, just ask yourself, what can I actually do about this? Mm-hmm. And what can I not do about this?
Right.
What do I have to accept and what do I have to change?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially these days when people's personas are falling off and people are on edge and irritable and everything else. And so we need some understanding, but also know when those lines are crossed and when that it goes too far. So, all right. Anything on how people can find you, or I'll just leave links to your podcast and all that stuff in the show notes.
Sure. Yeah. I'm Jade Spansky. I'm at Dear Jade on Instagram. My website is effortxless.com, and I'm Jade Spansky on Facebook. You can just add me there.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. All of your insights and dragon taming behavior or slang sometimes. And keep it real, Jade. Stay archetypal, and we'll see you around.
Bye, Isaac. Thank you.
Bringing complex ideas down to earth, based on their value, Knight Group Identity. This is the Daily Archetype.